Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Every single state in the Rockies and Great Plains, 10 of them, coming in this week with topsoil moisture ranging from 29%, very short to short, in South Dakota and Oklahoma, all the way up to 78% in New Mexico.
Talking topsoil conditions, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Number is also above 50% in Kansas, 58% is the number there, and Texas at 55%. And then even in the Western Corn Belt, we have three states coming in above 40%, very short to short, Iowa, North Dakota, and Nebraska. So certainly those areas could use a shot of moisture. We are getting that this week in parts of the Southern Great Plains, but with dry weather expected the next 5 days, Northern and Central Plains and Upper Midwest, we could see some further increases in those very short to short numbers as we head into mid-April.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
In my role on the House Agriculture Committee, I've spent years talking to people with lived experiences of hunger, lived experiences of hunger, advocates and experts about the need to protect SNAP, our nation's first line of defense against hunger.
Massachusetts Representative Jim McGovern before the House Subcommittee on Ag Appropriations.
I know the subcommittee chair and I differ in our opinion on restrictions in SNAP, but I implore this committee to reject any rider to further limit what recipients can buy or otherwise pilot food restrictions. This is a dignity issue. This committee doesn't try to police the shopping carts of members of Congress or anyone not utilizing federal nutrition benefits for that matter, and it is wrong for Congress to dictate to poor people how they should eat. Incentive programs like the Gus Schumacher Nutrition Incentive Program and SNAP Education have proven to be useful tools in helping families eat healthier on a tight budget. And I'd welcome members of this committee to join with me in working to further expand these critical programs. I also ask the committee to provide SNAP with such sums language to protect beneficiaries' access to the program. I also ask that the committee provide robust funding for other safety net programs that address hunger in America. These include fully funding the president's request for $7.7 billion for the WIC program to ensure pregnant and postpartum moms and their young children continue to have access to these critical benefits. $115 million for the Emergency Food Assistance Program, TFAP, storage and distribution and rural infrastructure grants. $4.4 billion for the Child and Adult Care Food Program and $425 million for the Commodity Supplemental Food Program. Robustly funding our school meal and summer feeding programs, including strong support for the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program, farm-to-school grants, and school kitchen equipment grants. Fully funding the Food Loss and Waste Reduction Liaison at USDA to ensure that food that is perfectly good to eat goes to people in need instead of landfills. Rarely in our lifetimes have programs like the McGovern-Dole Program, Food for Peace, and Food for Progress been more needed. So I strongly support providing a minimum of $2 billion for Food for Peace in FY 2025. I also ask the committee to make a special note of the needs of infants and children, especially those suffering from severe malnutrition and undernutrition when allocating funds and commodities for Food for Peace. Proven treatments for severe malnutrition, such as ready-to-use therapeutic foods and targeted nutritional supplements, should be fully incorporated into FFP programs where appropriate. Lastly, I ask the committee to support voluntary conservation programs at USDA, which help farmers in every state to increase the value of their operations and strengthen our food system through land stewardship. Conservation programs are especially important for small and medium-sized farms, as they are sometimes the only access that producers have to the farm safety net. I ask the committee to reject any harmful riders that may jeopardize support for farmers, including by protecting the crucial investments made through the Inflation Reduction Act. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right. And you're right, you and I are going to disagree on restrictions, but just to make it clear, we already restrict food choice on a low-income nutrition food program. It's called WIC. So it's not a question of whether we as a government have decided to do that. The only question is whether or not we should extend those same benefits of nutritious food to the SNAP program. But I appreciate your comments.
And with respect, Mr. Chairman, I think it is fair to say that all Americans need to improve their diets. And there are incentive programs that I support, like the GUSNIP within SNAP. But I think to basically focus in on a population of poor people is not a particularly good thing to do. It's not a nice thing to do. And so we could find common ground on ways to incentivize people to make better choices. But I think restricting choices for poor people is not the way we should go.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments from the gentleman from Massachusetts. Thank you for appearing before the committee.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
One of the biggest things that I can get across to everyone today is failing to plan is planning to fail. It really is that easy.
Speaking in a Nebraska Center for Ag Profitability webinar, Brandon Dirkschneider with Insurance Design Management.
There's a lot of tax laws in the Internal Revenue Code that are voluntary in nature. And if you don't do the planning, you're going to voluntarily pay those taxes because you weren't planning. So we want to make sure that our family farm and ranches are actually planning to succeed and survive and avoid some of those situations. From the outside in, primary reasons why we see farm families fail is because they don't have a current estate or succession plan, or it's inadequately or not written correctly. Very important to have the proper appropriate verbiage and written documents to make sure that your goals and objectives are actually being accomplished. Insufficient capitalization for that next generation in the operation, failure to prepare the next generation properly. And ultimately, it's the failure of communication and helping your family members, your children or grandchildren, on understanding the why you made the decisions you did. And communication is the biggest part in this. So when we always ask, who has a transition plan in place? If I'm speaking to the general public, I'll ask this question. I'll ask for a raise of hands. And in the room, it's usually about 20 or 30% say they have a transition plan or an estate plan in place. Where in all actuality, for those of us living in the state of Nebraska, even if you don't have a plan, you actually do. Because if you pass away without an estate plan, without a succession plan, you are dying, leaving your assets in intestate. And then the Nebraska intestacy laws will distribute your assets for you. And so it will depend on, are you on a first marriage? Are you in a second marriage? How many children do you have? What relationship you have with those children? And the county court will decide who gets what and how of your assets, not you and your spouse. So we always stress, you know, you may think that it's not a huge deal, but who would you rather decide to split up your assets? You and your wife, or your spouse, or is it someone else, a non-family member that really has no clue what your family dynamics look like? Because realistically, that's when our phone rings, is when the family didn't have a plan and the kids start fighting. And when the kids start fighting, the only people that really win are the law firms, because everybody's lawyering up and the attorneys end up winning and not the family.
He also talks about other ways to give away money.
There is aspects where you can give money away during your lifetime without affecting that exemption. That's called your annual exclusion amount. This year, it's $17,000 per person. So mom and dad could essentially give any child $34,000 in cash or assets without using up that $12.9 million exemption. But here's the elephant in the room. This $12.9 million, it will continue to grow for inflation. So just as you see, in 2016, it was 5.5. 2018, Trump doubled it to 11.1, and it's been growing based on inflation ever since. But what's written in tax law today is that that will sunset on January 1st, 2026. It is written into law, and it will fall back to $5 million per person on that date. The only way that this will change is if the Congress and the Senate and the President all sign a new law, either extending the current federal estate tax exemption or doing something different.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Succession planning is really a process. It's not a one-time event. It's not something that you do one time, put it in the bottom drawer of the filing cabinet and say, yep, I have a plan and I never have to look at it again.
President of Insurance Design Management in Omaha, Brandon Dirkschneider.
Because every time that Congress or Senate goes into session and they start changing laws, or the family dynamics change or family members change, that succession plan needs to get updated. But not only that, succession planning is really a process. And it's a process of identifying and developing the new leaders who are going to replace the older generation when they either decide that they want out, they want to retire, or maybe they become disabled, or they, as we all will, die and leave the operation. And in a family business, that can be difficult because a lot of times we treat that younger generation more as a hired hand rather than a leader or the next generation of leaders. So we really need to focus in on that mentoring process to really to help the next generation fulfill those key business roles and leadership positions. And within the operation, help them understand the why, help them understand why we make the decisions that we make, how we've gotten to the point of where we're at, and what decisions need to be made to help keep the family business in force or continue to grow the operation over the next decades to come.
Why is it so important right now?
The reason why it's so important is we know today, with over 2 million farms over the American landscape, still 99% of those are family farms, but only a third of those family farms have an actual transition plan in place. And with the demographic age of the American farmer getting older, we're actually going to witness the largest demographic shift of wealth our country has ever seen. You're going to see more assets change hands from one generation to the next over the next 20 years than you have ever seen before. And without the lack of planning, there's going to be working capital, cash flow, and assets that are going to be, could be negatively impacted, whether it's because of taxes, whether it's buying out family members without a plan in place. So, with that being said, we always talk about it. Well, it takes one generation to build that family business, second generation to maintain it, and it's the third generation that will maybe possibly use it. And that carries a really negative connotation to it at times. But with our American farm families, there can be a lot of truth to that. And a lot of truth statistically is because they're always buying out the non-active family members. My family even had that firsthand when my great grandfather passed away in 1977. He had 640 acres at the time that he passed, but he had 8 kids and each kid inherited 80 acres. And at that time, when he split things equally, a lot of the family was, or the active farm family members were forced to buy out the inactive family members. And today, a lot of those acres currently aren't owned by my family. And it's one of the reasons why I'm not farming today is because we didn't have a transition plan in place. So when this statistic or adage is thrown out, it's not because of a silver spoon syndrome, or it's not because they weren't fiscally irresponsible. It's because farm families do not take the time to say, okay, if I'm going to create an estate plan, what effect do those decisions in my estate plan have to affect the future cash flows or working capital for future generations? And that's really what succession planning comes about, is what are we trying to do? So when we talk about succession plans, we want to talk about what are those components? What are the components of a succession plan?
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Beef production raised this month 130 million pounds, mainly reflecting, entirely reflecting both the higher slaughter and higher weights.
Dr. Mark Jackanowski is chairman of the World Ag Outlook Board on the latest World Ag supply demand estimates.
Pork production adjusted higher this month, reflecting the hogs and pigs report, including farrowing intentions not as much as originally expected, pig crop revised higher, and the sustained growth in pigs per litter that report showed. Broiler production up 230 million pounds, mainly reflecting higher weights along with slightly higher sets and placements, and turkey production virtually unchanged this month. Prices, steer prices adjusted higher by $2.51 per hundredweight, just reflecting observed steer prices and, which are being supported by continued strong beef demand. Hog prices we raised by $2.24 per hundredweight. We're seeing a strong carcass value and also pretty strong export demand, which I'll show in the next slide. Broilers up a bit, again, just observed prices. And turkey, last month we raised it. We were optimistic, saw some strength in turkey prices, but that did not last long. So we're just seeing persistent poor demand on the turkey side and prices continuing to fall. U.S. meat trade, beef up just a little bit, just truing up to more recent trade data. Pork exports, highlight there is pretty strong. You look at strong growth year over year and a pretty big increase this month as well. Just seeing increased competition, increased competitiveness with EU and and selling into many different markets as well. Broiler exports down a bit, on the other hand, and that just is reflecting, as I showed in the previous slide, higher U.S. prices, and many of these markets that we sell broilers to are highly price sensitive. No change in our beef imports this month. Dairy production just a little bit lower this month and would be flat year over year. And the adjustment this month just reflects lower growth in output per cow. Dairy trade, main thing to highlight here on the dairy trade side is strong domestic and global demand for butter. So in terms of fat basis, raised our imports. That is driven by largely by butter as well as some other products as well. Exports are also higher exports of butter, as well as so strong demand for global demand for butter, and also some higher exports of cheese, where we're just seeing more price competitiveness there. On a skim solids basis, main thing I point out there, lower exports, mainly driven by lower global demand, especially for lactose and whey. It's driving that reduction to, this month. Dairy product prices, wrapping things up here. Again, the main story that jumps out is butter and strong global and domestic demand pulling those prices higher relative to all of the other major dairy products where we're observing lower prices. Class prices, class 3 price lowered this month, 95 cents per hundredweight. That is mainly reflecting those lower cheese and whey prices. Class 4 prices raised 30 cents per hundredweight, reflecting those that strength in the butter price. And the all milk price comes out to 35 cents per hundredweight lower this month, but still up a bit year over year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, realistically, the patriarch and matriarch of that family farm or ranch operation really need to identify what are your goals and objectives.
Brandon Dirkschneider with Insurance Design Management on succession planning and the importance of determining goals.
Because one of the things that we always talk about, and it's, you know, it's the golden rule, and it's really not the one that you learn in church, is you as the gold gets to make the rules. So the patriarch and matriarch of that farmer ranch operation, they have to be on the same page. And if they're not on the same page, it's really difficult to get that plan off of first base. It's really difficult to make sure that that plan can actually succeed. So we really need to take some time establishing what are mom and dad's goals and objectives. Can they be financially independent away from that family farm or ranch operation? Because they're probably not going to want to give up control if they're not financially independent. So what does that financial independence or cash flow look like for mom and dad if they want to start transitioning ownership or giving up control? What family should be involved in the process? What family members should be at the family meetings? Who should have a voice? And how should that communication take place is very important when we talk about farm succession planning. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about identifying successors. Who are the successors of the operation? And are those successors capable? Are they capable to lead the farm or ranch operation into the future and grow and enhance the value of that operation? We're going to talk about estate planning. We're going to talk about contingency planning or risk mitigation and what effects that has in succession planning. We'll talk about entity structure and taxes and how you do not want to try to have Uncle Sam being a major benefactor with the part of your transition plan. We're going to talk about how you value assets and that business valuation. We'll talk about exit strategies if you don't have the next generation coming back and you're worried about what you're going to do with your family farm or ranch with the next generation not coming back. And then we'll always, as always, you need to implement and follow up, because realistically, as I tell all of our clients, these plans probably more than likely are going to change every 3 to 5 to 7 years. As I stated earlier, tax laws change, family dynamics change, family members come and go. These plans constantly have to be updated to make sure that they're still accomplishing the same goals and objectives that the patriarch or matriarch of that farm family has set forth.
Of course, one of the biggest questions is how can we determine the value of an estate?
You know, if we look up at the tax assessed value of what the ground is on the assessor's website, you know, we may be under that. Well, the thing is when you pass away, it's not what you think the asset's worth. It's not what it's listed on the assessor's website. You actually have to go get certified appraisals done on those assets.
you will file what's called a 706 form. And that 706 form has to be substantiated with the certified appraisal. And they will take a look at everything that you own. They'll take a look at the personal property. They'll take a look at any 401k or IRAs or Roth IRAs that are in your name, any stocks, business interests, commodities, life insurance that you own personally, any prepaid inputs, anything that's on your balance sheet that's in your name that you own at fair market value or appraised value. They will let you subtract Nebraska inheritance tax. They'll let you subtract any accounting fees, appraisal fees, probate expenses, attorney fees, any executor fees, and any debts that may be owed against the estate. But the value of that after those expenses is what the value of your estate is. And again, if you're over the exemption amount at that date, and for every dollar that you're over, you'll pay 40 cents on that dollar to the federal tax.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
For our larger net worth farm families, if today you can pass $26 million down to the next generation, either during your lifetime or in death.
During a Nebraska Center for Ag Profitability webinar, Brandon Dirkschneider with Insurance Design Management.
But after January 1st, 2026, you only can pass $14 million. You just gave an opportunity to pass an additional $12 million of assets down to the next generation without paying tax. So if you do no planning, you just voluntarily paid 40% on $12 million or a $4.8 million tax because you didn't want to do any planning. So that is very, very important when we talk about succession planning, because with real estate prices the way they are, it doesn't take too many acres and other assets to get over that dollar amount after January 1st, 2026.
But he says it's also important to understand basis.
So when we talk about basis, if you give an asset away, the donee retains the donor's basis. So if I want to give 80 acres to my girls and I paid $1,000 an acre and today it's worth $10,000 an acre, if I give it to them, they have my same basis, that $1,000 basis. But if I hold on to that 80 acres until I pass away, they get a step up in basis. And they get a step up in basis of that $10,000. Well, why is that step up in basis important? Well, the step up in basis is important only in the event if my daughters would want to sell or were able to sell that farm ground. Then that step up in basis becomes important, because if they turn around, they sell it for $10,000 an acre and they got a step up in basis of $10,000 an acre, we just eliminated the capital gain tax that would have been due on that asset. Again, voluntary tax in nature on that situation. But why would we wait until we pass away to give certain assets away? And this is where it really gets important on the communication side, because you may say, okay, if I have little Susie who's back in the operation and she's contributing her sweat equity to the operation, and I want to start helping her build her balance sheet or her net worth so she can continue to grow the operation earlier on in her career, maybe I'm going to give her a certain number of acres. Okay. Well, if I give her acres, she retains my basis. She doesn't get the step up in basis. But if she's the active farm child, is she going to sell that asset? Does it really matter what her basis is if she's the active farm child and she's going to farm those acres? Well, maybe not. Maybe the step up in basis is not important. But that inactive child that we believe is going to inherit some farm ground, well, maybe mom and dad need that farm ground to maintain their financial independence. Maybe they need the cash rental income off those acres so they're financially independent away from the family farm operation. Well, if you're giving something to Susie and you're not giving something to her brother, little Johnny, do they think it's fair? Well, they may be disappointed. But if we explain to them and help them understand the why, and we say, okay, Johnny, if we give this to you today and you turn around and sell it, you're going to go capital gain tax on the gain at $9,000 an acre. But if mom and dad retain it for the next 10 to 15 years and we get to keep the income stream off of it, and then you inherit it and you get a step up in basis, we just eliminated your capital gain tax and now you get 100% dollar on dollar for what you were potentially going to sell that asset for. Now, all of a sudden, the inactive child is like, okay, hey, I understand why my sister or brother got something today, and I'm going to have to wait. a number of years before I inherit my share. So those are the conversations when succession planning becomes very important regarding basis.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Even though the latest USDA Ag Trade update shows exports down from a year ago, that update does have a sprinkling of good news in it. Corn, for example, after months of declining export values, corn sales have crawled back ahead of last year.
Corn exports through February 2024 were $5 billion, up 4% from the previous year.
USDA economist Bart Kinder says very low prices for corn have lured more buyers to it, taking sales value up again by 4%.
Volume of corn exports is 42% increase. So we are exporting a lot more volume. The value is way down.
But that corn at least is moving. Meanwhile, a candidate for most improved sales, it's sorghum.
Sorghum exports are 369% greater than they were at this point last year.
Mostly due to more purchases by China,
which uses sorghum not only for feed, but also for production of liquor product and also industrial use.
This is Gary Crawford, Washington.